You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Conspiracy theories seem to be part of the fabric of American life. They have been for some time. They are great in variety, but they are resilient as well. When one is defeated or falls out of favor, another one pops up to take its place. The latest that has been getting the attention of The Atlantic is a conspiracy theory called QAnon. What is it, and what does it have to do with American evangelicalism, if anything? Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to be talking about that Atlantic story about evangelicals and the conspiracy theory called QAnon. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Is this QAnon controversy real in terms of evangelical life?
It certainly is. The question is this a group of people who are somehow preying on evangelical culture, or has this conspiracy actually grown out of evangelical culture? Or then I can put another layer on this. Has it somehow become typical of evangelical culture? Those are three very radically different statements. And this article that ran at The Atlantic comes really close to saying that the movement is essentially defined by evangelicals for evangelicals. The problem there is that we never really get anything, plus or minus, from any major evangelical leaders in terms of what they think of this conspiracy, you know, what they agree with it, what they disagree with it. There's basically no content in this article that is drawn from evangelical authorities. That's kind of strange when you're saying that this is a huge, massive conspiracy that is sunk into evangelical culture.
So very few, a minority of Americans know what this is because it's kind of a troll-like internet-based thing. But how would you summarize what the theory is, the QAnon theory?
Well, you have this mysterious source named Q, who is out there in what people call the dark web. And these are very obscure parts of the web, but they are followed by thousands of people. And Q mixes lots of religious language in with his conspiratorial political views. Now, there are even people who think Q is Donald Trump himself. But the dominant view seems to be that Q is some sort of former intelligence official in the U.S. government, and he knows secret things, and he's always telling people, you won't believe what's going to happen next. There's more here than meets the – in other words, it's typical conspiracy theory stuff. Now, what I think this article does a very good job of is showing – that this thing is real, with the quotes from it, with influence, with signs that there are people kind of linked to Trump administration life. The degree to which they're linked depends on how much you accept the conspiracy, that are a part of this. It also, I think, does a good job in showing that there are serious issues here for evangelicals to worry about, because it quotes run-of-the-mill evangelicals that the author has run into in his research, kind of what I would call grassroots-level evangelicals, who clearly have bought into this. And I've been taking a lot of heat on Twitter for my criticism of this article, mainly from left-of-center evangelicals who are very concerned about this trend. And you know what? I think they should be very concerned about this trend. They missed what my primary concern was about the article. If you know anything about evangelical culture, you know that it is a movement that generation after generation is defined primarily by its authority figures. In other words, there isn't a bulletproof evangelical creed written somewhere. You may remember that years ago I interviewed Billy Graham, and Billy Graham told me that he had no idea what the word evangelical means. And I told him that was crazy because he's one of the people who would define it. We got into a discussion, and he said, well, whatever evangelical means, you have to define it in terms of doctrine. Well, once again, in this article, what we have here is an attempt to define evangelicalism primarily in terms of political culture, in terms of political conspiracies, and by a few concepts in evangelical life and culture. You know, obviously, the second coming is in the creed, but evangelicals in the 20th century took sections of prophecy and other things, and a couple of books like The Late Great Planet Earth and a couple of million Left Behind sales, and you've got a kind of unique view of the apocalypse and of millennialism and the second coming and the end of the world, and that's unique in corners of evangelicalism. I don't think this author realizes that that is not a common theme that unites evangelicals, or that just because you believe in the second coming doesn't mean that you believe that there are passages in Revelation that tell you how many Israeli Harrier jets can land on the head of a pin. This article needed sourcing from people who spoke fluent evangelical. And this article, most of all, in my opinion, needed insights into the QAnon conspiracy and its threats from major evangelical leaders who are criticizing it, who believe this is, in effect, a new heresy that has burst out of conspiracy theory land on the internet. This article at one point says this could be a new religion. This literally could be a new religion movement. Yet at the same time, it says this movement is defined by evangelical language and ideas. So which is it? Is it some sort of expression of things within mainstream evangelicalism, or is it some people preying on evangelicals as a part of a political conspiracy? If you know anything about the alt-right, you know that the alt-right, of which this may be some sort of variation, the alt-right definitely includes religious people who use religious language. But there are large parts of the alt-right that are completely secular in their orientation. And they may be people who claim they're Christians, but if you follow it down, they have no links whatsoever to mainstream evangelical institutions, colleges, seminaries, publishing houses, broadcast ministries, all those things that kind of define the cultural movement of evangelicalism. This same article doesn't show ties to any of those institutions either, yet it's portrayed as an evangelical culture instead of maybe a tiny evangelical subculture that's mixed up with a bunch of secular politics. It's all confusing, but it's pretty confusing when you read about conspiracy theories. If conspiracy theories are consistent about anything, it's vague, smoke-blowing confusion, and the Q people certainly use a lot of that.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about an Atlantic story about evangelicals and a conspiracy theory called QAnon. So of the three choices, it either comes from evangelicalism, or it has kind of infected evangelicalism, or it's typical of evangelicalism. Which position does the Atlantic story end up with? We'll answer that after this.
In in sickness and in health. In these days of coronavirus panic, people are learning how difficult keeping this vow can be. The May issue of the Lutheran Witness looks at the wedding day. How does the couple plan their wedding with their pastor in a way that points to Christ, the only one by whom and through whom they can keep these impossible wedding vows? Read all about how Christ keeps his church in sickness and in health in the Lutheran Witness. Subscribe at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Have you ever wondered if your investments could do more? I mean, a whole lot more? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When you invest with us, you not only earn a competitive interest rate, but your investment goes to strengthen Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations through low-cost loans and services. To learn more, visit lcef.org/invest101.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry. lcms.org/deaconess.
Sanctifying your vocations with the Word of God. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union serves the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod community with car and personal loans, mortgages, credit cards, checking and savings accounts. Lutheran FCU supports LCMS organizations with its Spotlight Ministry program, and Lutheran Federal Credit Union allows you to make purchases with Apple Pay, Google Pay, and Samsung Pay using your digital wallet. Learn more at lutheranfcu.org. Good for you, good for the church, Lutheran Federal Credit Union, lutheranfcu.org.
Despair says nobody cares, and that's not true.
Dr. Christian Kincaid, author of the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for May, Living with Grief, Bound by Sorrow, Wrapped in Comfort.
And despair says there's no hope for me, and that's not true. To despair is not of God.
Learn more about Living with Grief at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilk, and we're talking about an Atlantic story about evangelicals and a conspiracy theory called QAnon. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. So Adrian LaFrance writes this Atlantic story about this. You mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that kind of three possibilities. Which of those three is, if you had to choose one, and if you could kind of set this out from the article itself, if you had to choose one, which one does LaFrance finally land on?
You know, I really can't figure that out. I've had people yelling at me for saying that I implied that the article said all of evangelicalism is into this. No, it doesn't say that. What it says, though, is that this strange QAnon sect, let's call it, is defined by evangelical language and by evangelical concerns. And then it never says, meanwhile, what do mainstream evangelicals think of this article? I think evangelical leaders need to read this article because many of them, frankly, will not have heard of QAnon. And it's kind of hard to say that it's dominating evangelicalism if there are many mainline leaders who haven't even heard of it. Or if they have heard about it, they certainly haven't addressed it publicly. I accept, based on what I've heard from friends and other people in the last couple of days, that they've seen signs of QAnon fascination out in their churches, and they're worried about it, and I would say they should be. But let me read you a couple of pieces from this article that give you a sense of what this sounds like. Here's a passage where they're talking to an activist out in Ohio. This had been something she was reluctant to speak about at first. Now she said, "I feel God led me to Q. I really feel like God pushed me in this direction. I feel like if it was deceitful in my spirit, God would be telling me, enough's enough. But I don't feel that. I pray about it. I've said, Father, should I be wasting my time on this? And I don't feel that feeling that I should stop." Now, that's pretty evangelical language. I've known lots of people who heard God's Spirit telling them all kinds of things. In the ancient church, this is the sort of thing you took to your priest and others and tried to figure it out. Then later, you have a major outside source comes in. And listen once again to this. Arthur Jones, the director of the documentary film Feels Good Man, told me that QAnon reminds him of his childhood growing up as an evangelical Christian in the Ozarks. He said that many people he knew then and many people he meets now in the most devout parts of the country are deeply interested in the book of Revelation and trying to unpack all of its pretty hard to decipher prophecies. Jones went on, "I think the same kind of person would all of a sudden start pulling at the threads of Q and start feeling like everything is starting to fall into place and make sense. If you're an evangelical and you look at Donald Trump on face value, he lies, he steals, he cheats, he's been married multiple times, he's clearly a sinner. But you are trying to find a way that he is somehow part of God's plan." Wow, that paragraph wanders all over the place. I mean, if you're trying to figure out what role God may be playing in the Trump era, then I guess that makes you adjacent to QAnon. But then meanwhile, I mean, how many other political movements and political conspiracies and wild ideas have been associated with the Second Coming just in like the last 50 years of evangelical and fundamentalist life? This is not something that popped out of the book of Daniel in the Trump era. If you know anything about evangelicalism, you know that these sorts of wild hares have been running around for a long time. So does that mean that evangelical Protestant language, ideas, and doctrines are the X factor in this growing threat to American life and culture? I don't think the article makes that case. I think it does make a great case that these people are real. They're selling this to some people, and I think it needs to make a case that evangelical leaders would have strong comments they would want to make about this threat and about this kind of movement. And sure enough, in the wake of the Atlantic article, there have some pieces that have come out and some things I'll be quoting in a follow-up piece that'll go later with this podcast. I also think it's crucial that it's in the Atlantic. And the Atlantic, of course, is a name brand in elite media. It's a magazine that in recent years, evangelicalism have come to trust in some way because, you know, of the writing of Emma Green, someone who we have praised on this podcast many, many times. Emma has a tremendous ability to deal with the nuances of evangelical life and thought. And know that there are divisions within evangelicalism and tensions within evangelicalism, and that at some point you have to talk to people on both sides and let them hash this out. That's precisely what the Atlantic article didn't do. And in the end, when you have an article that says this is a major trend in evangelicalism, and you don't have any quotes from people in the Southern Baptist Convention and the Assemblies of God, from seminary and college faculty that would be crucial to observing and understanding these sorts of things, Christian publishers, etc., that's a pretty big God-shaped hole, you know, in this piece. So it's an important piece. People should be reading it, and people should be reacting to it. I just wanted some of that reaction and truth-telling and sifting to go on in the article itself. Because I think there are going to be a lot of readers who finish this article and think, well, there go those evangelicals again. You know, they gave us Donald Trump, and now they're going even further. Early in my piece, I put it this way. I hate to quote myself, but I think this is the heart of this thing. It's almost as if evangelicals are playing, for some strategic minds on the left, the same sick, oversized role in American life that some evangelicals assigned to Hillary Clinton, George Soros, Bill Gates, and all those liberal Southern Baptist intellectuals who love Johnny Cash and Jane Austen. I mean, that's... I think evangelicals are now haunting the minds of liberals. So what this article ends up painting is a liberal conspiracy theory about the role that evangelicals are playing in conspiracy theories.
Who should LaFrance have talked to or at least quoted?
Well, one of the persons who has spoken out in a piece written from the Billy Graham Center at Wheaton is Ed Stetzer. I mean, and he would leap quickly to mind. Karen Swallow Pryor leaps to mind. More than anyone else, though, you have Thomas Kidd, the historian at Baylor who has that very well-read book this year called A Crisis in Evangelicalism, or Evangelicalism, A Movement in Crisis. I mean, if you went looking right now for people who would know the history of apocalyptic thought in evangelicalism and the many previous times it has gotten messed up in political thinking and ideas, rumors of wars, etc., it would be Thomas Kidd. But, I mean, it would be very easy to come up with 5, 6, 10 people out of any quick Google search for, like, evangelical history, comma, Trump, comma, crisis. I mean, that's just talking off the top of my head. But you would see many names come up. Call up Al Mohler at Southern Seminary. This might be something that Russell Moore could talk about. He certainly has been outspoken on the alt-right. Russell Moore, the spokesperson for the Southern Baptist Convention in Washington. It's not hard to come up with some names of people who could address this.
Terry, are there some basic journalism principles on how you go about covering a conspiracy theory?
Well, I mean, the main thing you have to establish is some on-the-record body of facts showing how influential the conspiracy theory is. And I think this article does a decent job of showing that influence in terms of political arguments on the right. And I think it does a good job of showing that in the mini siloed world of the internet, that this is something that is influencing some people. It's out there. So I think it gets the politics right, and I think it gets the technology right. Where this on-the-record voices of authority breaks down is with religion. And I know it's a common theme. I know I say it all the time. But if you try to look at politics and religion only through the eyes of politics, and if you deal with it primarily with voices who know a lot about politics but don't know much about religion, you end up with big, important parts of the equation missing. And in this case, readers should go through this with a highlighter pen, print it out and mark it up, and mark who the evangelical voices are. And there just aren't any other than grassroots people who clearly have been influenced by this. Now, if you accept that Q himself or herself is an evangelical and that he's speaking out of some God-given sense of prophecy, okay, who's Q? And by the way, how do we know he's actually a sincere evangelical? I mean, we live in an era where some of the most influential names in conservative politics are people who talk to evangelicals, yet it's very clear that they themselves, based on their lives, their beliefs, and other things that they say, that they're not evangelicals. Would you accept that Rush Limbaugh is an evangelical?
No, I don't think I would.
How about Donald Trump?
I don't think he fits the mold either, no.
I don't think he's certainly not walking the talk. And when he tries to talk the talk, he seems to be speaking in an unknown tongue. Now, Vice President Pence, yeah, there's somebody who's got his evangelical bona fides, and you can follow them right back into his political career in Congress and as a governor. So it's not hard to get voices of authority that can talk to you about the influence of evangelicalism on Mike Pence. But these other people in this article, I don't think it adds up.
Finally, with only about 30 seconds, did this article give us something? I had not heard this term before that may be sticking with us, which is the term political cult.
Oh, there have been political cults for a long time. The issue to me is whether or not this has the staying power to be some sort of alternative, rebellious religion in American life. And I would say come back about 3 months after the next election and I'll discuss that question with you. But I'm betting that it doesn't.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overbee Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for your time.
Glad to be here.
In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., we're going to be studying a hymn of glory, Let Us Sing. It's a hymn for the ascension of Christ. Now, what's the big deal about the ascension? It's kind of the bookend to maybe the incarnation. He does not cease to be man, but he goes to the right hand of the Father. He begins to rule there from the right hand of the Father. You know, the church of the past has made a big deal out of Christ's ascension in liturgy, in hymns. Why? We'll talk about that with Pastor Will Wheaton as we study that hymn, A Hymn of Glory, Let Us Sing, next.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Our pastors especially have carried a large burden to maintain Christ's instruction to provide word and sacrament ministry to their flocks. Thank your pastor by sending him an Ad Crucem greeting card or gift suitable for any budget. We recommend embroidered face masks, stunning posters confessing the faith, a crucifix or a pectoral cross, or how about a selection of Christmons? Recognize your faithful under-shepherd for upholding the office of holy ministry during these adverse circumstances. Visit adcrucem.com.